We're down to our final four, and it's all about the editing. Does David have the chops to edit our sabotaged interview into a show? Find out on this episode of America's Next Top Podcaster. Welcome to America's Next Top Podcaster. I'm Brian Ibbett. It's the beginning of our editing challenge where I've asked our four contestants, Bobby, Gabriel, Kristen, and David, to take an interview we've provided and edit it down to a 15-minute podcast. Here's the thing. We've turned that audio into a minefield of issues that come up frequently in podcasting, but just maybe not all at the same time. On this episode, we're going to follow David as he gets coaching from Tom and creates his completed submission, which we'll hear at the end of the show. But before we get to that, let's chat with David about this challenge. I'm here with David Lizader. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Final four.
Final four.
It's unreal.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on making it this far.
Thank you.
Teams are done. How you feeling about that?
It's sort of a little bit tragic, and also, you know, now I get to prove myself standing on my own, but at the same time, I don't have other people to rely on and to work with and to blame problems on.
That's right.
So
yeah, if this podcast isn't good, then there's only one person that we can point a finger at, right? Is that
exactly.
Now, you did most of the editing, looking back at the credits from your teams, you did most of the editing across the board, or at least a lot of the editing, maybe not most of it.
I'd help out where I could. Sometimes someone else would do the majority of it, but I'd pop in and maybe help add the music or help tighten things up or something. Mm-hmm.
And so you feel pretty comfortable about this week?
Yeah, I actually, my degree is in broadcast journalism.
Cutting up
interviews and all that is pretty much in my wheelhouse.
Oh, wow. All right. Then we should see something great from you on this one. Do you feel like you've found all of the mines and the traps that we've laid in this thing?
There are a lot, even I think beyond the noises people make and the interruptions. There's no clear introduction
right.
of either of the interview guests. It kind of meanders a bit. This is a tough one to try and find a focus on, I'll admit.
Good. Well, we were kind of hoping. We worked hard. It doesn't sound like it because this sounds like an interview that somebody went into completely without a plan. That's probably the interview that we had the most plan into it. Yeah.
All of this was on purpose?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Are you, what?
Did you? Did I not make that clear when we gave you the task on Monday? Oh, yeah. No, this was, we have a document that Hammond, Joe, and even Jason and Ashley and I worked on where we listed out all the things we needed to make sure that we did in this interview. And
okay.
So it's not scripted, but boy, is it. It is crafted. I'll just say that.
Very interesting. And now makes me feel less bad because I'm listening to this. I'm like, how do I not insult Joe when I talk about this interview? And now I don't feel bad. Now
it's
all on purpose.
Feel free to insult him because he knows.
Joe.
You're probably thinking to yourself, how did this guy win interview week?
a little bit. I was like, this is who taught this guy how to interview? Oh, man.
Awesome. Oh, I love hearing that. Excellent. So do you have some ideas of how you're going to integrate all these pieces and parts of this interview, frame it, put it all together?
Yeah. So my idea right now, and I'm going to talk to Tom to maybe get a better bit of an idea, is to actually get rid of most of it. Sure. And I asked you kind of directly, does this have to be an interview show? And you said no. So my idea might be that I did a comic book podcast for a very long time. So I had an idea of what if there was a show that helped people find an entry point on comic books. And at the beginning, okay, at the beginning of the interview, Jason talks for a bit about the House of X Powers of 10 comic pretty glowingly and why it's a good jumping on point. And I'm still kind of figuring out the details, but that might be the angle that I go with.
That's a really smart idea, figuring out a really good key point of the interview and then just kind of basing the show around that. I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it won't be super long, but I think that is going to be okay.
Yep, absolutely. There's nothing that says you have to use the entire 15 minutes. It can be as long or as short as the content allows.
And, well, it's good to know.
Yes, very good. Oh, I'm excited to hear this, and I'm excited to eavesdrop on you and Tom talking about it in a little bit.
Well, I'm excited to hear what he has to say, because I'm still on a couple points a little lost, so I'm hoping he can help point me in the right direction.
I've been really surprised with Tom the last couple weeks. I knew that he had done... obviously, we knew that, you know, the news and commentary thing was his idea. So it was his baby. He was super proud of it. And I was really surprised with the List show that it was something that he had a lot more experience than I had realized. So I'm looking forward to hearing what his take is on editing interviews. I know he's conducted more than his fair share. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, no podcaster starts out with a team behind them that does all their editing for him. So I know he's done editing, but I wonder how much he's done. Oh, this will be great.
Well, we'll see. I'm hoping it will be.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you turn in, David. Let's listen to their coaching session with Tom Merritt.
All right, Dave. Congratulations, by the way, on getting so far. This is great.
Thank you so much. And thank you for all of your guidance so far.
Oh, well, I'm sorry that if it has ever gotten in your way, and I'm happy if it's helped.
I'm sure a little bit of both at times, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the way of it, right? How are you feeling about this editing challenge?
So the editing challenge it's interesting because this is placed in my background a little bit. I went to school for broadcast journalism, so editing is not new to me at all. The problem is this interview that I have to navigate and pull together and make a story, not necessarily a story, make a podcast with.
So you're more concerned about the content than the practicalities. You're not concerned about all the traps that may have been laid for you with missing audio or bad audio, stuff like that.
No, not too much, because honestly, I'm probably going to be losing most of the audio.
What are you planning on doing?
So my plan is a show that I'm calling right now, Jumping on Point. I am a longtime comic fan. I did a comic podcast for a long time. And a difficult thing in comics is always trying to figure out where to, even if you've been reading for decades, is where to start with a certain character or a certain series. And so this would be a show that would be a little bit themed each week, but would give listeners a place to say, hey, are you interested in reading Golden Age Batman? Here's where you start with that. Are you interested in jumping on modern day Daredevil? Here's a really good place to start with where the story and character currently is.
And then how are you going to use the interview then?
So at the beginning of this interview, Jason Inman talks very excitedly about the House of X Powers of 10 series that just came out from Marvel for a bit, and actually talks about why it's such a great jumping on point and gives kind of a nice overview of it. And modern day X-Men is one of the hardest continuities to unravel. And so this would be a great episode to kind of tackle what would be within the fiction of this universe, a white whale, which is modern day X-Men. And I would spend a little bit of time up top explaining why it's such a hard continuity to crack, and then bring Jason Inman in as a quote unquote, you know, expert guest to say, why is this current series such a great place to start?
So are you going to just use sound bites from him, or are you going to say, our correspondent got caught up with Jason and talk to him about this?
So I'm thinking I might be able to pull off where I make it seem like perhaps I have Jason with me, you know, on the phone, which could be a pitfall. And if that doesn't work, then I would find some way to have it be like, you know, well, our super producer spoke to
Scott. Won't mind that. I would be careful how you do that. It's not that it's wrong. It's that it's certainly there's a possibility that it could rub the judges the wrong way, because they know you didn't conduct this interview. And there's a way you could do it that would, especially Jenny and I think Justin both, maybe even Scott, maybe I'm wrong about Scott, would be like, wait, we know you didn't interview him and you're pretending like you did. And we know that's the magic of editing. I think you want to steer away from pretending like you're actually talking to him, because then that is faking the interview. And that could come off as a problem. I'm certain you're not going to, like, you know, use his answers in a different way than it was intended, of course, but you might, a safer way to do exactly what I think you want to do is to say, we caught up with Jason and we asked him about blah, 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 then do the soundbite of him answering that. So you're not exactly pretending to have the conversation or have him on the phone, but you're still, the listener is going to feel like they're hearing a conversation. Does that make sense?
What is happening?
What's going on?
Okay, well, Discord, whatever you just, after you said always say we, Discord just like locked up on me.
Oh, wow. Okay,
I didn't hear anything you just said. Yes, I can hear it happens sometimes.
Prevent me from giving you ethical advice.
Wonderful. I guess, yes.
Basically all I was saying was you could do it where you say, we caught up with Jason and we asked him, you know, about blah, 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 blah. Then you play the soundbite of him answering that question. And then you come back to you saying, we also wanted to know from Jason. So it's more of a TV package kind of back and forth than pretending to have a conversation. But it's a way that it comes off as a conversation if you do it right, without risking that backlash of like, wait, you weren't there and you're faking this.
Okay. Yeah. That was how I originally was going to do it. I kind of had that harebrained idea today to like, maybe I can present it as like, I'm talking to him, but
I mean, I hesitate to tell you absolutely not to do it. You might get away with it. I want to raise that idea that one of the judges could look at that and say, no, that's not okay. Because if you were a news program, it would not be okay.
Right.
But if you're a news magazine program, like 48 Hours, then maybe that's okay. Right. Like it just kind of depends on what they're expecting.
Okay. Yeah. I'll try it a little bit both ways. Cause I don't foresee this being a very long show, which I think is okay. It'll probably be under 10 minutes. So I probably will have time to maybe try it both ways and see. What sounds good.
The other reason to maybe not do it as the fake phone conversation, besides the sort of ethics of it, is it does require you to act. Now, it's not a heavy amount of acting, don't get me wrong. But you might have some stuff not land as cleanly as you thought. And doing it as a comment soundbite gives you cover. The people like, oh, well, I understood that he wasn't actually talking to him. So when he reacted in a weird way, that's, you know, not a problem anymore. It gives you a little more room for people to understand that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And especially when you're dealing with some possible weird audio issues in there, you might be able to use something that you wouldn't think you'd be able to use if you were trying to pretend to do a phone conversation.
Yeah, I went and capped out because I transcribed the entire interview just so I could read through it and see like, okay, what of this could I use? Mm-hmm. And with the X-Men stuff, it's about 3 minutes of him talking. And there's not a whole lot in there, luckily, that I have to avoid pitfalls on.
Yeah, okay, that's good. How long are you thinking the whole show will be then?
Maybe around 7 minutes.
Okay, so you're gonna add a lot of setup and explanation and extra content to it, which is great. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I really want to. In the beginning, I had this idea of, you know, when I'm trying to explain why the X-Men continuity is so hard to crack, is I was just going to start reading off plot points, but I was going to layer them together, so it becomes this sort of confusing din of noise, which is what trying to read X-Men comics can feel like.
Right.
But yeah, I really want to like drill in of like, this is why it's so difficult. And then here's why he doesn't do a lot of setup of like, and you know, here's who writes House of X. Here's who draws it. Here's where you can get it. So I would do that at the end as well.
The downside to this could also be to this concept is that you may get a judge reaction of this was an editing test and you Kobayashi Maru'd it. You know, like you changed the rules of the test. We didn't get to see your editing chops. Someone might ding you for that. Mm. So what I would do to counteract that is make sure that the production level of the non-interview parts are stellar.
Okay.
Like, so when you're talking about that sound pastiche, make sure that plays. Run it by a few other people and make sure, like, does this make sense? Does it sound good? Does it impress you? Because if you can show off your editing chops in the rest of it, that can be a great explanation of like, yeah, no, I did a lot of good editing. It's just, this was the concept. Because I think you have a very defensible good idea here to say, like, I might go do an interview, get that bit, and even if the rest of it isn't very good, only want to use that bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of some good ways for you to fend off that criticism.
No, I appreciate that. It's just, honestly, a lot of the content of the interview wasn't very deep, and so I had a hard time building a concept around that, because it's not an interview that I would conduct. So I had a hard time thinking of show. Yeah. If they never come to any satisfying conclusion on anything they really talk about, then I had a hard time going anywhere with it.
Well, at the very least, you can just say that William Shatner was the most successful Starfleet admiral ever. And so if you go down with his ship, you're honored.
Well, I'll try to use that defense when they're eliminating me.
No, I think this is good. I think this is a good idea. And I'm coming up with these worst case scenarios is not meant to say this will happen, but just trying to, give you some of those outer defenses. I think you got a really strong concept here, man.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Awesome.
This is Jumping On Point, a podcast that helps new and longtime comic book readers find the right place to begin with a particular storyline or character, because comic numbering can be confusing and number ones can't be trusted. I'm David Luzader, a veteran comic fan and podcaster, here to help you navigate this week's topic of modern day X-Men. Modern day X-Men has been requested a few times for this podcast and has been avoided because it's a pretty difficult topic, but it looks like there might be a light now at the end of the tunnel. Before we get to it, though, you need to understand why it's such a difficult topic. There are three primary reasons why modern-day X-Men are so hard to get into, and reason number one is the sheer number of characters. Most superhero books, like the Avengers or the Justice League, are made up of independent heroes who have their own books. So you don't have to worry about the character beats for characters like Iron Man or Batman when you read it, because they're often their own title having those moments. When you're reading the Avengers, all you're getting is the bigger adventure that all these characters coming together are having. For the X-Men, though, there are over 100 characters who either are or have been X-Men. And that's not even beginning to include all of their side characters or any of the villains. There are only ever a few X-Men titles running at one time, and while not all 100 characters will be spread out among them, the teams are still made up of 5 to 10 characters. Unless your name is Wolverine or Deadpool, you're unlikely to get more than your own 6-issue miniseries every once in a while, which means that for most of the X-Men characters, their storylines and character beats have to happen within an X-Men title. And since this is a team book, the rosters change often, which means that the characters and storylines that you're trying to follow can change pretty much issue to issue. And it's not just the difficulty of keeping track of who's around, it can be difficult to keep track of what's going on, which brings us to reason number two: X-Men have some insane storylines. Now, comics are not known for their realism, but when it comes to the X-Men, they take the insanity and drive it as far as they possibly can. For the X-Men, things like death and resurrection, or time travel, or dimension hopping, or switching sides are all so common that it would be unusual for an X-Men story not to include any of them. And retcons happen so often that what might be true one moment will not be true the next. Things get pretty crazy when you start digging into some of the actual plot lines. For example, not too long ago, past versions of some of the X-Men came forward in time to spend time with their current
Wolverine
selves.
Wolverine died, but his clone and alternate
Jubilee
self just took his
vampire.
Place.
Kitty Pride the faced Red a bullet Skull through the earth Professor and then continued just riding it through space.
And put it inside of his own head and
Terrigen Mist started killing
universe,
mutants, so they just moved the mansion to a pocket dimension.
Became the Dark
Phoenix. Namor is a mutant now, I guess? And that's just some of it. And all of these crazy plot points, they're not just in one X-Men title either. And that brings us to point number three. There is more than one X-Men book running at any one time. We mentioned this briefly before, that there are usually several X-Men titles running at the same time. Sometimes the stories overlap, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes characters move between books, and sometimes they don't. it can be hard to keep track of which books you need to be reading to know what's going on. Should you be picking up just Uncanny X-Men, X-Men Red, X-Men Gold,
New X-Men,
Adjectiveless X-Men,
X-Men
All
New Black,
X-Men,
X-Force?
You get the idea. But earlier this year, Marvel canceled all of the X-Men titles and started publishing just two books, House of X and Powers of Ten. The two books were 6 issues each from the same creative team of Jonathan Hickman and Pepe Larraz, and told an interlocking story. The idea was to start a new age for the X-Men, one that had a definitive starting point, a starting point that could even be an entry point for new readers. To find out if it was, though, we reached out to Jason Inman, a comic writer, podcaster, and X-Men expert. Or expert. Okay, maybe that joke only works in writing.
I mean, one of the most difficult things about reading X-Men comics, when you pick up an X-Men comic book, there's so much time travel, and there's always a hard time of keeping, like, when are people alive or dead?
That's Jason. He's the co-host of Geek History Lesson. They've talked about the X-Men a lot, so he understands the struggles of X-Men comics.
They actually recently just killed Wolverine. It actually is a good story how they killed him, but the problem is that they couldn't figure out how to do an X-Men universe without Wolverine, so they immediately brought in, from an alternate timeline, Old Man Logan.
Even as a longtime fan who can be critical of the tropes of the X-Men, he can get a little excited when he talks about these two new books.
The greatest X-Men storyline in the last 20 years. Powers of Ten and House of X, that's actually what it's supposed to be called, is sort of this soft reboot of the X-Men where, slight spoilers, I mean, it happens in like the second issue, so I don't think it's that big of a spoiler. They reveal the classic X-Men character Moira MacTaggert has mutant superpowers, whereas in previous storylines, she's been thought to be a human, and Moira's superpowers are the powers of resurrection, where you find out that if she dies, she goes back to the womb in her mother's belly, of course, and she can remember everything that happened in the previous lives. And so she has been going through the timelines trying to improve lives for the mutants. And if you put together the title Powers of Ten, you might be able to figure out how many times Moira has done this. And it plays around with this idea of time. Everything in the book is done by X1 or X2, but it's like it's X-Men year one. So X1 is like the year that Charles Xavier founds the X-Men the very first time. And then current Marvel timeline is X10, which is 10 years after the fact. But then they also show you X100 and X1000. It's pretty awesome. And it's kind of given the X-Men universe a kick in the pants towards the future, which it so desperately needs.
Like a lot of X-Men books, the premise is a little out there, but what matters is, do you need to know all the decades of confusing history in order to be able to read it?
Again, there's not too much you can say about it without spoiling all of it, so I will just say, I don't think you need to know anything about the X-Men, or if you have a basic knowledge of the X-Men, like you've seen the movies, I think you can totally pick it up and enjoy it. It's also weirdly self-contained.
House of X and Powers of Ten concluded in October, giving way to a new age of X-Men being called the Dawn of X. All of the X-Men books in this new age are being overseen by Jonathan Hickman, who continues to write the main X-Men book. I've been told that Hickman's X-Men is where the plot of the Dawn of X is mainly happening, with everything else being bonus. Hickman has said that there will be no new mutants in this current age, and that everything you need for Dawn of X is set up in the 12-issue miniseries, which means that for modern-day X-Men, House of X and Powers of Ten is a perfect jumping-on point. All 12 issues of House of X and Powers of Ten can be purchased on Comixology right now. Or if you're a little more patient, you can wait for the digital collected edition on December 11th. The physical hardcover edition is available for pre-order now and will be released December 24th, just in time for Christmas. I want to give a special thanks to Jason Inman for joining us on today's episode. You can find out more about Jason's podcast and his comics and his upcoming book at jasoninman.com. If you have a comic that you want a jumping on point for, then let us know on Twitter at @jumpingonpoint. Until next time, true believers.
That was Jumping On Point, the edited interview submission from David. On the next three episodes, we'll see how Kristen, Gabriel, and Bobby are doing with their editing, and then we'll close out the week with the judging and elimination episode, where one player will win for the week and one player will go home. It's all coming up this week on America's Next Top Podcaster.